Welcome back to the Rook Cell Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Farouk Bello, and this is the second part of the conversation with Anne Gates. Now, if you didn't listen to the first part of the conversation, I would recommend you have a listen of that first and then come to this, but you can also just listen to this if you choose to. This podcast episode is going to be talking about the WHO physical activity guidelines, which were recently released. I would say, depending on the time you're listening to it, either a few weeks ago or a month ago. But and provide some good light on what they actually are and what they mean, because they only really come out every 10 years, and we're going to wait for another 10 years before you probably see another one. So it's good to know what it's all about. And more importantly, the first part of this conversation is talking about Movement for Movement, which is a big project that Anne has been working on, which is basically promoting physical activity and movement as well. So that's what you probably hear first before you hear about the WHO guidelines. And she just gives some really great closing remarks and summary of our whole conversation together. So I hope you enjoy this podcast episode. And once again, I present to you Anne Gates.
We chose that very cleverly because actually exercise doesn't translate in lots of languages, and we wanted a more global feel. So there's two parts of it. The movement is the social movement, and that's around social movement theory and how people connect and enable something to get past a tipping point to change, changing society, changing behaviours, changing individual patient patterns and outcomes. So the movement part was very important because we wanted that to feel like a community of practice, and it does. And there's lots of, you know, there's lots of challenges on that community of practice bubble, for want of a better word. But the community of practice is completely hierarchy free. We work very organically and interactively, and that's the momentum that we have in the social movement. So movement for movement, and that was the movement bit, was really around saying, look, can we just move on from the exercise, physical activity, leisure conversations and just get people to move more and sit less? And so that then became very, very important, back in 2013. But the worst thing and the shocking thing for me was that we weren't teaching our future healthcare professionals about that. So there was a massive gap across every single healthcare professional university curriculum on where that sat. And in fact, even for physiotherapy, we know that only 16% of physiotherapists know those WHO, well, it's actually UK guidance. And Nicole Freen out in Australia has done, you know, research around that. So we know that knowledge is poor. But in terms of movement for movement, knowledge is something that you can look up. Skill acquisition, you're talking a whole different educational attainment. And so the movement for movement was set up, yes, let's make knowledge a slam dunk. Yep. Let's get this social movement, but also let's get this community of practice advocating and implementing better educational practice. So we found out that physio students on placement weren't being taught anything around the physical activity options that their patients could have. So they weren't being part of that process. So that's when we set up the educational projects that we've done, and we were fortunate to get an Erasmus Plus European Union World Health Organization grant for €450,000. You know, it's a massive grant to take forward what we consider to be world-class undergraduate resources. Some universities are doing that very well. So Lancaster Medical School, UEA in Norwich, School of Health, doing really great work, but also Nicole Freen at Canberra University now is using the Movement for Movement resources, this educational one-stop knowledge and skill acquisition opportunity. They're rolling out against 14 healthcare disciplines. So that's become quite important, and I have to say over the last few months kept me awake, you know, so worked very hard. But we wanted also to strengthen students, because I'm passionate that students are vanguards. They're our hope carriers of the future in terms of getting ahead on this holistic personalised care for non-communicable diseases, because that's going to be a big issue for everybody. Like COVID was a big issue,
yeah.
Non-communicable diseases are a big issue. And it's interesting because these resources now contain things about leadership, change agency. So again, we've removed the silos, I've disrupted all of that, and we've said to be an effective healthcare practitioner from student, you know, cradle to grave care across your career, you need to know or access the knowledge, but these are the skills that we want you to think about on brief interventions from placement across your entire career.
Yeah. Now, I think with the point of students, that's it. I like the sound of moving to Mwena, where it's going, and the emphasis, you know, on students. I was just a student not long ago. I was a student earlier this year, and I think that you're the one who helped me through the last lap, to be honest. So I don't know, for people listening, and was my mentor, and well, he's my mentor, who was the one who helped me out, you know, when I was going through, you know, applications and, you know, figuring out. She's one of the people who also like pushed me to start Rooks Health and, you know, take this on and try. So thank you very much for that. And it's been very, very helpful. Now,
it was my pleasure, of course.
Now, first, the student point is that I think what you learn as a student, especially, you know, healthcare students, for example, I'm going to take physiotherapy as the example because I'm fresh out of that one, is very important to how your future goes. And when I say that, I mean this, is that what I've learned in those 3 years and on placements, especially placements, is the one place I think I learned most of my skills, basically as a clinical skills, non-clinical skills. And it's where I developed my own, you know, style in a sense. And I think that's, and the targeting that area of a student's life is very important, because that's when you're really seeing how other people interact with you, like how patients interact with you, and how can you promote different things. And one thing I'm very big on is, you know, holistic health and holistic, you know, packages, which it's not promoted as much. And that's the one thing I'll say, I didn't learn as much as I probably would have thought, you know, you should, while I was in university. It's not knock on my university. It's probably something I've picked up, you know, just being very curious in, you know, nutrition, being curious in psychology, being curious in every other aspect of the whole package of health and what makes up health, not just, you know, the physical aspects. And I think when you start treating people holistically and we start looking at it and saying, you know, what are the other things? What is the whole circle of how to make this person? Because ideally, in an ideal world, I don't want to be seeing people with back pain or lower back pain in an ideal world. I see people with back pain, but I don't want to see people with back pain that has developed from things that could have been easily prevented. Like, as you said, sedentary lifestyle can be avoided and is one of the reasons. Postural changes, that's one of the reasons why people get back pain. You know, you sit down in one area in bad position for long periods of time, you're going to develop back pain most likely. Not getting up and moving, lying down, not exercising. These are things that easily cause very, as you said, non-communicable, and it's a role in a lot of deaths and untimely high mortality rates, things that can be avoided. And I think the road to that starts with when you teach and train healthcare practitioners like myself, you know, as students especially, and what to do when you go out and start seeing people independently. How are you promoting health? How are you promoting physical activity? It's not all just about, you know, am I giving you a rehab plan to fix? You have a shoulder problem, or you have an ankle problem, you have a knee problem. Am I just giving you that rehab plan? And once you get back to where you were before, you go back to square one, and then it comes on again. Or for example, you treat someone with back pain, and everything's brilliant after a few weeks. And then they go back to what gave them the back pain in the first place, by which is the full circle. And then you see them, and it's a horrible cycle. And if you can find a way to break that chain, you know, and promote so that I'm not seeing people with things that, as you said, can be solved or can be prevented.
Yeah, I think that this is, I was very, very lucky. I do realise that, because not only did I get excellent education at Nottingham University School of Pharmacy, but I then moved to the Derbyshire Royal Infirmary, and the training that I had over a period of 5 or 6 years there was exceptional. There's not a single day that I don't, that goes by where I do not celebrate the training that I had, and I just absorbed that excellence of care, that curiosity, also that support to do all of those things really well. And I think that as students, I mentor a lot of students, and I lecture at a lot of universities, and this idea of getting it right at the individual level for your patient, this idea of personalized medicine, and this holistic approach is so important, because you start to notice that waiting rooms are really dysfunctional in what they're, you know, what they're promoting, what they're trying to do. You notice that the hospital cafe isn't selling particularly healthy food. You notice that students aren't leading particularly healthy lifestyles. And so all of these things need to be reflected on back into the individual students, and recognizing that the first duty of care, and I regret that some of this wording has even been removed from the GMC guidance on tomorrow's doctors, but I've always held this belief very firmly. Mm-hmm. Our duty of care as healthcare professionals is to protect and promote the health and well-being of our patients. And for the last 38 years, I've never stopped that. That's been my strap line, my go-to line. And so if we're talking about promoting health, there's not a consult, whether it's low back pain or whatever, MSK or whatever, where we should not be adding considerable value. And again, I have this conversation often. Patients just turn up in the waiting room and we see them. When you start to understand how important that appointment was for patients, they might have had to be on a waiting list. They might have had to travel far for maybe what is a 9 minute, 20 minute, 30 minute consultation. You, as a healthcare professional, are like a diamond in their struggles.
Yeah.
You know, and in the struggles of poverty and the social determinants of health, you are like their lighthouse beacon moment.
Yeah.
And we get used to managing big clinics and everything else. And I think that to reflect on the enormity of this protecting and promoting health is essential in part of a brief intervention. So some people say, oh, I don't have time. You mean life-saving? Is we put a cost on that?
What's the cost of a human life?
Changing somebody's life. You know, really, really getting them to understand and buy into buy into that whole concept. You have the skills, so please use them. That's what I say to every student. And, you know, the culture might be against you. Keep your integrity. Keep your sense of, my duty of care is to protect and promote, my patients in terms of health outcomes. And I think that that's really important. And that's the challenge we have over the next 20 years. Non-communicable diseases, that burden of heart disease, cancer, yeah, MSK issues, it's going to monopolize all the monies, all the infrastructure, just like COVID did. You know,
took a lot of resources.
Yeah, but the crazy thing is, I remember being trained 15 years ago for Majaxes, where there was a significant event like an all-encompassing infectious disease.
Yeah.
At the moment, we've got non-communicable diseases that are a huge burden and are continuing that burden with immobility and disability. So that's why I think it comes back to my very first comment at the beginning. We have to understand our patients and the communities where they are, and we have to act. Once we've had our education and our skill acquisition, then we need to lead. So we have to affect change, not only in the clinic and our clinic environment, But, you know, why does it take two buses to get to cardiac rehab? Why isn't there special track? Why aren't we busing patients in to this life-saving medicine? Why aren't we recognising that there is a high degree of inequity in our communities and focusing on that as much as we focus on the new shiny robotic tech?
Technology.
I'm not saying, and I love robotic tech, you know, but we've got to have it appropriately to what meets the patient's needs and our community's needs and population health needs. So I think that it's the duty of care of every physio, every healthcare professional, student doctor, student nurse, to look at some of these issues and to look and think, how can we do that better?
Absolutely.
And that to me is the end point of Movement for Movement, to enable students and other healthcare professionals to feel confident in their advocacy. That's my greatest wish, really.
Yeah, and I think I like that quote. You know, there's a movie which is Watchmen, and I like, which is one of the characters says, never compromise. And I think, you know, in life you have to compromise some, but there's some things you should not compromise on, especially when, and I always talk to my flatmate about it, and I say, you know, when you're in a role which is health and you directly have the influence on someone else's life, quality of life, direct life, there's some things you can't waver on, and you have to just take it as seriously as possible. Because, and I like that, you know, Diamond, because I think working in community now and going into people's houses, I think for me that's one of the best things I could have done as my first rotation, because it's really seeing, and I go to someone and I see, and I can tell that they haven't had someone in health because of COVID particularly, they haven't been able to see their doc, GPs are doing telephone, you know, and I'm the first person that they're seeing about who is in the health world in the past, you know, months now. And they will just start to tell me everything, and they will really see you as, you know, how can you help me as much as you can? And my role is, I will help you as best as I can. And I will, sometimes I go above and beyond just to see what you can do, just to see if you can make an impact and see how you can better provide someone's life, change someone's quality of life as much as you can. And so that's Movement for Movement. And so with these new WHO guidelines, which they mm-hmm. said they haven't dropped anyone in 10 years. So is there anything new to
no, this? So these guidelines are really quite different, and they're going to last us for another 10 years.
Okay.
And they were only published on the 26th of November. There's lots of really, really important systematic review publications that underpin the guidance. And we've slotted that all into the Movement for Movement resources over the weekend, and that's when we launched on Monday. The guidance is very explicit. There are differences that I would suggest, you know, physios do look for the differences between the WHO guidance and the UK Chief Medical Officer's guidance.
Okay.
But basically for the under fives, it's still 180 minutes of active play.
Okay.
And strength training exercises, which we know now are much more integrated into metabolic health processes and things like that, so they're really important. The 5 to 18 year olds is still 60 minutes.
Okay.
And again, the 18 to 64 is still around 150 minutes. But in certain special populations, they have now said that needs to be 300 minutes.
Okay.
And the other thing is about replacing your sedentary time and avoiding sedentary behavior. So they're the main changes. They've got some very cool infographics across the life course and in special populations that I think should be up in every physio clinic in a waiting room. You know, I think we need to have that whole, you know, you don't go to a restaurant mm-hmm. and not expect to be shown to your table, you know, to have the table set nicely. You know, yeah. It's setting that scene. And I think, or even going anywhere, you know, to buy something in a store, there's certain expectations. And I think we need almost a patient movement to give those expectations that when we interface with healthcare organisations and professionals, we should have this guidance readily available in patient format, patient-facing format, so that they can understand what they're doing and what they're not doing, and you know, how they could change, how they could access a certain opportunity, be it in their own home or within the community or within the hospital service. And I think that that's, so the WHO guidance, okay, I think again is the baseline. I think what physiotherapy does with that is going to be pivotal. So it's how those how that guidance is implemented, yeah, in practice, and how the profession rises to that challenge. How do we make physical activity more the norm? How do we make it more accessible and equitable? What roles do we have in implementing that? And, you know, to me, well, that's core business for physiotherapists and occupational therapists.
Yeah, no doubt, Lee. That's a big part of our role, you know, health promotion. And, you know, CSP and all these events, they're always doing posters and poster events where, you know, they're trying to find the best poster. And I think, you know, that phenomenon of, you know, being in a waiting room and look and just sitting and having something to look at is a very, very important time where you can really catch someone's eye and promote what you're trying to promote. And it doesn't even feel like you're pushing any agenda, but subconsciously, if I'm sitting down and waiting, for example, go to the dentist and you just start reading around what's around the area. And if you can use that time that person is waiting, because as we know, I mean, waiting times can be long, as from 10 minutes to, you know, might be waiting for an hour, you know, use that opportunity to maximize and promote what you need to promote, especially this physical activity. I'll definitely be having a look at the guidelines in more in depth.
Well, again, and I think we need to get students into that environment. You know, they're almost like they could be used as precursors on placement, recording physical activity levels. And again, you know, there's something about how do patients record their physical activity levels, you know, in socially deprived areas? You know, that's a whole conversation. And how do we record physical activity? And you can't really ascertain that entirely from tech. I mean, it's helpful, but a large proportion of the population don't access that.
Have access to that tech, yeah.
But so I think that these conversations and recording it in the notes, the exercise, you know, like the exercise is a vital sign, is really pivotal, because only then do we know whether we are improving our patients' potential outcomes. And we can help support them by that positive feedback by saying, well, you know, you're only able to walk, you know, to the shops, but now you're able to walk around the park quite easily. That's tremendous progress. So feeding in that positivity and progress is really, really key and important.
Yeah, and I think, for example, I just made this up kind of the moment. Nice. For example, if you set that SMART goal and someone's achieved their goals, and you say, okay, so your goal is now to, you know, for example, and depends and always varies depending on the context of where you are. Your goal is to walk from here to, you know, as you said, the kitchen, or you cycle from there to there, and you've met that. That's your goal, and that shows me that you are now at a good place. You can say, you know what, you've done this now, so why not try going a bit further again? You know, you've done a great job. See how far, test yourself and see if you can push yourself to see, because I'm sure you know this already. The human body is almost to an extent limitless and with limits. You won't know your limits until you keep pushing it, until you find it. And before you find it, you might never actually. But keep going and as much as you can is a very, very important thing. And you said physical and verbal feedback and confidence and encouragement goes a long way. And sometimes we don't think of, you know, for some people, we're more numb to it. Some people have that internal drive already. They don't need the external thing where, you know, I would say to myself, I push myself just because I want to push myself. Not everybody is like that, you know. Sometimes people need that, you know, great, you know, keep going, keep doing it. And that's very how people progress. You're going to say?
But I think also there's this real opportunity to really have what I call compassionate care in physical activity. So if you're a mom, you know, with five kids under the age of 10, holding down a part-time job, living in a socially deprived area, yeah, my goals change, because I think that my goals for them change and adapt. And I think sometimes we forget, you know, a lot of the sport and exercise stuff is very glossy. It's almost unattainable. We set our patients up to fail on even the slightest improvements because, you know, they're at different levels. And I always say this, this is almost a family quote. My heart and my money will always be on the patient who I know that has struggled compared to maybe a sports person that it's been very easy to attain that degree. And I look back at my own sporting career and really, you know, I mean, I could run. I was good for running and long jump and sport and everything else. And I was also quite a good swimmer as well. And those were things that I was naturally able to do. Those were opportunities. They were privilege, for want of a better word. And I think that we do have to connect with our patients within their context, within their levels. And so going back to the SMART goals, I think SMART goals, again, have to be embraced with a compassion that an understanding of some of those inequities, some of those, I run an exercise class a long while ago in a very deprived area with predominantly, it was run for women, Asian women. And, you know, some of the challenges that they have to exercise on a daily basis are massive. And so, you know, just coming to a class a week, feeling part of something that they could connect with, making friends, doing it with family, you know, they're the key things. That's what makes it all happen so much easily. And then you notice that they're progressing. And then you notice that, in fact, they started a Zumba class or something like that of their own accord. And I think that's the direction at population levels that we can really move towards. We can really start connecting and reaching out to those community opportunities. So very important. But, you know, whatever specialty you're in, if you're MSK, you know, check. Does the patient still, you know, have they attended cardiac rehab? Did they ought to have attended cardiac rehab? You know, don't get siloed. Look at patients holistically. And also ensure that you're providing life-saving medicine, because that one opportunity may well change that person's life forever. As coming to the close and sort of reflecting on our conversation today, which I have to say, I've just loved chatting with you, Rook. So thank you ever so much. It's been really a pleasure to discuss these issues. But I'd like to challenge your audience. I think as healthcare professionals, we can give big tobacco, big food and big pharma a real run for their money. We can only do that together. We can only do that by being better advocates in our consults and in our communities for physical activity and recognizing the value of other treatments such as medicines. But I think the force that we have is that we have this remit, we have this scope of practice to protect and promote the health and well-being of our patients. And actually, that's our business model. Yeah. And there's nothing more powerful in the world, believe you me, than that model. And I think it's time we embrace that, we become the change that we want to see in the world, and we make it happen. Because I mean, particularly after COVID, I think the time's right for change. And I think that change agency is the way to do that and make it happen going forwards.
Definitely. And that's the only way we're going to see progress. And it may not be short term, but it will definitely be the long term progress. And you may not see it tomorrow, you may not see it today, but you'll definitely know the impact of the changes you make right now at some point in your life. And you'll be very grateful for them. But thanks again, Anne, for coming on, and I really do appreciate it. So you got about to say something, Anne?
I was going to say, do you know, it's really odd. I think that we have to accept that we do things not knowing if there's going to be any sort of outcomes or anything. It was only in later life that I realised, oh my God, I ran that project and it had that impact. You know, and it might be 15 years ago. And so you've just got to accept that that's your skill set. Do it well. and move on to the next mountain that you have to climb over, because that way you look back and, you know, you've bagged whole country Munros and mountains and God knows what on the journey. And as I said right at the beginning, I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, that's the only way I've been trained to think and do. But I think now is the time for us to really come together as interdisciplinary professionals and make this happen for patients. As I say, thank you very much, Rook, for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I wish you very, very well and all success in your career, and everybody else out there too. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Anne. Thanks for coming on, and we'll chat with you again very shortly.
All right then. Take care. Have a good evening.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast episode with Anne. This is a very good two-part special for myself. I really did learn. And as I said, Anne is a very important person to Rook's health in general. So I hope you did enjoy the podcast episode as well. If you have any questions for Anne particularly, you can reach her on social media at ExerciseWorks. And I will put that in the description as well. And I think if you've been listening to this podcast, you know the drill in a sense. Any questions, anything, any comments, can always reach the podcast at Rook's Health on anything. But make sure to check out the description if you have any questions or anything like that. Till next time on the Rook's Health podcast, and I hope you enjoy the podcast episode.